Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts for today.
And I'm Paul Wearson. Welcome to the show.
It's Wednesday, so we're going to ask you to join us in exploring the seven county areas of KHOI. It's 7 County Wednesday. Paul, I believe that one of the stories that you're going to bring us today is from Hamilton County.
Right. It's going to be Ragtime and Randall time on Saturday, this Saturday the 24th. We're having a fine celebrity come in, Scott Kirby, who's internationally known as a ragtime piano player. He'll be doing two shows, one at 2 and one at 7:30, in the small town of Randall. And we're going to have Scott as our guest via phone from Colorado.
Awesome. And also KHOI's environmental reporter, Pat Schlarbaum, is providing a report from Story County, specifically Story County Water. Pat recorded discussions with Hannah Bates, who is the Prairie River Resource Conservation and Development Watershed Manager, and Amy Yoakum, who is the Resource Manager for the Story County Conservation Board. This is about water quality in Iowa, how we can be improving it, and specifically Hickory Grove Lake's watershed. There will be a number of meetings coming up in the next few weeks that we want you to know about. If you are a landowner, a citizen scientist, or just a citizen that cares about water quality, the first will be this coming Tuesday, October 27th, at the Oriole Lodge, which is at Hickory Grove Park, and that will be at 7 p.m. Hickory Grove is a lake southwest of Colo in east-central Story County. Work is being done to address serious water quality issues in the Hickory Grove Lake watershed. Pat explains, so let's take a listen to that.
Today on Local Talk, we're with Amy Yoakum with the Story County Conservation Board.
Hi, Pat.
Hi, and Hannah Bates. And Hannah, you're from Ames also?
Yes, I am.
And what organization do you represent?
I work for Prairie Rivers of Iowa, which is a resource conservation and development organization that is oriented around improving the environment.
How long have you been at this profession?
I have been working for Prairie Rivers of Iowa since June of this year. I graduated from Iowa State University with my master's in science in sustainable agriculture and sociology in May of this year.
Boy, sociology and conservation, you're kind of a people pleaser then, aren't you?
Yes.
Is this position the work of a lifetime?
Absolutely. I mean, I spent the last couple of years studying social attitudes of farmers in regards to conservation. How can we encourage conservation across the state of Iowa at the watershed level?
And also, Amy Yoakum is here. And Amy, you do a lot of resource management for the county. Boy, this must ring true to your ears to learn the private sector is involved with things that are near and dear to your heart.
Well, yeah, and especially at Hickory Grove Lake, where we have a big watershed project going on right now as well.
Could you explain a watershed project?
The watershed project we have going on at Hickory Grove right now is because the lake itself is impaired for bacteria. We've been trying to find the source of that bacteria and also trying lots of different practices both on private property and in the county park itself to try to help mitigate anywhere the bacteria could be coming from. So that includes reducing the Canada goose population at the lake, upgrading all the septic systems in the watershed, and also excluding some cattle from a stream where about 75% of the water enters into the lake.
Sounds like you've got E. coli issues.
We do. We had a pretty good summer. I think we only had a couple of really, really high weeks. But it's better this year than in a couple years ago in the droughts. We had really high levels all summer long.
Let's define the watershed then. It's
the area, the topography, where all the water kind of drains into one certain spot. So into one creek or lake or river.
So you've got a situation and you're looking towards potential sources of the contamination. Hannah, how does that work with the RC&D's mission then?
Well, our mission is to educate and advocate for the environment. So we want to reach out to those in the community and help them understand what's going on in terms of water quality impairments. We want to teach them what a watershed is and get them really invested into their community, their natural community that they live in.
Is this a new position for you then?
Prairie Rivers of Iowa actually has a multitude of environmental programs. Our watershed is just one of them. We also have a local foods program promoting
local foods.
Local foods, yes. Mm-hmm. And an urban forestry program, as well as a Lincoln Highway Heritage program as well. So I'm just a little piece of a big puzzle of what Prairie Rivers does in terms of the environment.
What is your funding source?
My funding source is currently is the Iowa Department of Agriculture Land and Stewardship Water Quality Initiative Demonstration Project. So it's quite a mouthful. We're a line of, I believe, about 16 demonstration projects located throughout the state of Iowa to show different strategies and approaches for how we can reach out to farmers and landowners, as well as urban residents, on improving our water quality.
So you make a lot of contacts each week?
Yes, I mean, we're at the beginning. Our project started back in April, and I started in June, so really at the beginning point where we're establishing our strategy and how we're going to reach out to farmers and landowners. I'm going to start actually doing more boots-on-the-ground work next month, because if you call a farmer or send them something in the mail at this time of year, it's just going to get thrown in the trash and they're not going to pick up.
Well, it's a busy time of year.
Yeah,
I guess with the harvest and all. Sure.
Yeah, but we're being very conscientious and deliberate for how we're going to reach out to farmers and landowners over the next several months.
And you're evolving towards a public meeting?
Yes.
Could you tell us a little about that?
Sure. We're having a public meeting on October 27th for the East Indian Creek. Located at Oriole Ridge Lodge at Hickory Grove Lake.
What time?
7 p.m. That's very important,
yeah.
7 p.m. And the purpose of this meeting is to tell people we're interested in water quality. We're going to do something about it. We're putting in a water quality monitor that's going to start doing monitoring as of the beginning of next year.
Now, is that an individual or a machine?
It's a machine, but we need individuals.
That's okay.
The thing. So
yeah.
That's part of the meeting, is that it's a call to action for people to come help us out with monitoring the water. We also can offer nitrate testing kits for farmers and landowners within the watershed where they can test their tiles. So we can get some basic information. I mean, it's a color test on a little strip that you can see from white to hot pink as to how much nitrates are in the water. But any information we can get to help get some conservation practices, build awareness, the better.
We're visiting with Hannah Bates with the Prairie Rivers RC&D. What is that, RC&D?
It stands for Resource Conservation and Development.
Resource Conservation and Development. We're also here with Amy Yoakum. So Hickory Grove, when was that built?
I believe Hickory Grove was built in the late 60s, early 70s. And then around 2008, I believe, is when it was listed for its impairment. So we had Iowa State come in and do a number of different studies for us and then also create our watershed action plan. Now we're trying to obtain grant funds to help implement the different things laid out in that action plan or the management plan for us.
What are some of the sources? Where do you send these grants?
Both the grants that we're working on at Hickory Grove and the one that's funding Hannah's work right now are through the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship. My grant is called a WIRB grant, W-I-R-B, and that stands for Watershed Improvement Review Board, and it's actually paying for work to be done on private property outside of the county park.
So there will be funding available for interested farmers to improve their water quality.
There is a lot of money, seems like, coming lately for water quality improvement projects.
Mm-hmm.
So the grant that Hannah is working with right now, the WQI grant, or Water Quality Initiative, that grant is paying for conservation practices in Squaw Creek, cost share money.
Okay, now that's a little shift. Squaw Creek, it runs northwest out of Ames.
Yeah, that one is pretty big watershed, and Hannah can probably talk to that better than I can.
Squaw Creek watershed is 146,000 acres, and it's in Boone, Story, in Hamilton County. And about 80% of the watershed is in a corn and soybean rotation, whereas only 7% is in urban areas. So you have this situation where you have not a lot of people in control of a lot of land, and then you have a lot of people in a small area of land. So you have many diverse audiences that you're trying to reach out to in terms of getting people invested in water quality. And
well, you mentioned something that was kind of intriguing. You have a testing device. You can test the nitrates in the water right at the outflow. Of the tiles.
Yeah, it's a partnership we have with Iowa State University Extension and the Conservation Districts of Iowa, where they have these little test kits. That's a bottle of about 30 test strips called AquaCheck, where you just dip this test strip in the tile flow that's coming out of your tile line. And then it's a 60-second test to show your nitrate level, and it ranges from white to hot pink as the level of your nitrates from like 0 to 50 parts per million of the nitrates in the water. And farmers and landowners can see what color they have, and if they're happy with that number or what color that comes out, we can talk about it and see what we can do to improve the amount of nitrates that are not, like, reduce nutrient loss coming off their farms, or if they're happy with that color that they're seeing, what else can we do on their farm?
What is the level of impairment that you're concerned with?
Parts per million, well, drinking standard is set at 10 parts per million. So we don't have, from my understanding, a public streams and water standard in Iowa. Rather, it's just a drinking water standard. But within Squaw Creek, much like East Indian Creek watershed, we face problems in nitrogen, phosphorus, and E. coli as well for what's in our public streams and waters.
There's obviously a lot of concern when it comes to water quality in Iowa. I'm visiting this morning with Amy Yoakum with the Storey County Conservation Board and Hannah Bates with the Prairie Rivers RC&D, who are going to start guiding some of our local farmers into determining what the water quality is and measures that hopefully can create some improvement. Is this a multiple-year position for you?
Yes, it's 3 years to start.
Okay.
I mean, it's grant-funded, so of course there's an end date, but with the option of renewal, and then we're always looking for other funding all the time, not only to keep the position going, but also to find new ways to help farmers and landowners within the area and help implement more and more practices, because right now we offer cost share for the Squaw Creek watershed for no-till, strip-till, cover crops, bioreactors, saturated buffers, normal buffers, and then perennial systems as well. So,
boy, you mentioned some things there. What's a bioreactor?
A bioreactor, to put it simply, I like to describe it like a water Brita filter you put at the end of your tile lines at the edge of a field, where it's just a wood chip system that goes in the ground that your water from your tiles flow through and clean out the nitrates.
And what were some of the others?
Cover crops.
Cover crops, okay. A lot of focus on that. And what are some good cover crops?
It depends on what the interest of the farmer is and how they're working their land, what their goals are. If you're a farmer that has livestock and you're interested in addressing issues of compaction on your farm, like the soil being packed really tightly in the ground, something like a turnip or a radish should be good, because not only does that break up the compaction of the soil, but it also serves as foraging for your livestock. We are actually hosting a field day up near Stratford, Iowa, on November 7th, where one of the farmers has an integrated grazing system with his cattle. He said he's never seen his cows so fat and happy than when they're grazing off his cover crops.
Yeah, I've seen some of these turnips and radishes. I mean, they're just enormous. It's from the healthy Iowa soil.
Absolutely.
And these things are big as footballs.
Yeah,
it's amazing.
It's only contributing more to the soil. I mean, it's a symbiotic relationship.
So those tubers, they kind of break up, aerate and break up the soil.
Absolutely.
And then there is forage available. What were a couple of the others?
If a farmer is interested in addressing soil erosion on his farm, he's very hilly, slopes on his land, he can plant like a cereal rye. Or triticale, it's a winter wheat rye hybrid that offers a green cover on top there on the surface of the soil, so that it keeps it covered over the winter time.
Yeah, the fact that we leave our soil so barren in the autumn, it's black all winter, mm-hmm. most of the spring. Gee, this is pretty innovative approach that you're taking for a gigantic issue here in mm-hmm. Central Iowa. So you mentioned some dates. Let's run through where the public meetings are going to be. Once again, please.
Yeah, we're very ambitious. We have a lot of events coming up. The East Indian Creek meeting will be on October 27th.
October 27th.
Mm-hmm. And that is located at Hickory Grove Lake.
Hickory Grove Lake at 7 p.m.
Yes. And that will be specifically towards the water quality monitoring in East Indian Creek. And then in terms of Squaw Creek watershed, we have a host of four different events coming up in November. The workshop series is called Nutrients in November, And it's a series of workshops that are focused on different aspects of nutrient management and land use that farmers and landowners, or really anyone who wants to attend, can come and learn. The first one will be by Lisa Schulte-Moore and Carrie Chenault from Iowa State University. And they've developed a new tool for farmers to consider alternative uses for their landscape without having to put themselves at risk to actually try these practices out in the landscape. So it's an online tool that anyone can access. It's free, that people can essentially plan and plant their watershed and then see what the soil and water quality impacts are, as well as what would be your bushel impact if you were to plant corn and soybeans along with having a cover crop or putting in a wetland, that kind of thing. And then our second workshop will be on saturated buffers, which is one of the newer practices that have been added to our suite of practices available through the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy. And that will be led by Dan James and Tom Eisenhart, both from the Iowa State campus as well as the USDA ARS. And then lastly, we will have a workshop on those test kits that I described earlier called Retain N Iowa. And that will be by Jamie Benning from Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, in which she'll show people who come to the meeting how to use those test strips appropriately and how to keep a log on the nitrates coming off of their land.
Well, I can see a lot of interest at that meeting in Gilbert, Iowa, 6 to 8 p.m., November 17th. Mm-hmm. Public is welcome. We can get to the source of these nitrate levels that are unacceptable and hopefully make a big difference.
Absolutely. And, of course, our final event, which I didn't, on November 7th, we're hosting a field day near Stratford, Iowa, on Jim and Anita Johnson's farm on 3926 Hammond Avenue. On that field day, we're showing two farms, only Jim and Anita Johnson's farm, as well as Jim McHugh's farm, which is a neighbor of theirs, and they both do different sets of conservation practices. I really want to emphasize with this field day that it's actually at the headwaters of the watershed. So it's right at the beginning of where our water quality is kind of set for the rest of the watershed.
For the Squaw Creek.
For the Squaw Creek. So we'll be showing the practices that they do and show a realistic approach to conservation practices by showing how they're actually used within real farm operations.
And that one is November 7th.
Correct. From 1 to 5 p.m.
1 to 5. Is that a Saturday?
It's a Saturday.
Okay. Oh, this is pretty exciting that you have some tools, you know, as you mentioned here, a new practice in the water quality toolbox. It's very encouraging that your position is going to be out doing the work. Let's clean up the water. And Amy, this has great potential for the Hickory Grove.
Yeah, the Hickory Grove watershed is actually in the East Indian Creek watershed. So helping to clean up the problems in the lake ultimately helps in the whole East Indian Creek watershed as well.
Well, it's been a problem for a number of years. I think you mentioned 2008.
Mm-hmm. And it's a place where people have a lot of contact with the water.
Exactly.
Whether they're swimming or boating or fishing, you know, if you're actually, you know, I'm not sure how many people actually spend time in East Indian Creek itself, but they are definitely touching and in Hickory Grove Lake. It's very important that that's safe water for people to be in.
Well, Amy Yoakum, Hannah Bates, keep up the good work.
And we encourage everyone to come on the 27th to the watershed meeting at Hickory Grove Lake.
October 27th. That's so kind of get this rolling. It sounds like November 7th.
We have high hopes for all of the events that we have and that they'll really engage people in the watershed, because we can only make a difference through people really becoming invested in their community, and our community is the nature around us.
It's becoming very apparent that it's time to take care of some of these water issues, so keep up the good work.
I'd like to add, too, how thankful we are that the WQI grant is paying for Hannah's position, and also there's another person, an educator position as well, because, you know, a lot of us have good intentions of doing work in the watershed and doing outreach and helping to implement different practices, but it's a big job, and it's not one that you can really do well unless it's your full-time job. And being able to have grant funds to hire these positions is really exciting that things may actually be placed on the ground instead of people just talking about what they wish could be done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's time for action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like the difference in my position is not, I'm not just in an office filling out paperwork. I'm actually going out to farmers and reaching out to them one by one and having those discussions and building those relationships rather than just simply saying, oh, we're offering cost share. So we're offering a relationship that we want to see you improve because we want to see the watershed improve.
Go to the website. We'll add that information at the at our website, KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 Story City, Ames. This is Pat Schlarbaum reporting with Amy Yoakum and Hannah Bates. Thanks for all you do for conservation.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah. Thank you.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We want to thank Pat Schlarbaum for providing that report today and on the efforts to improve water quality in Story County and for always keeping us up to date on environmental news in the area. I'm Paul Wearson, and I'm one of your hosts, along with Ursula Rydenburg.
And that is an upcoming series, Nutrients in November, about water quality here in Story County. Paul, you have some news from Hamilton County. You're on the Randall Fine Arts Council in Hamilton County, and you're going to be telling us what's coming up there, but you're bringing us to Hamilton County by way of Boulder, Colorado. Please explain.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, this is Ragtime and Randall coming up on Saturday, the 24th, this Saturday. And Ragtime and Randall has spanned over a 25-year period. Bob McNutt, originally from Clarion, Iowa, just picked this little town of Randall, Iowa, to have his piano tuning and repair business. And he, with friends, founded this Ragtime in Randall, originally out of his home. Then it grew into something that got way out of hand. It became an annual festival, and we're reviving it this year. But this year, we've hired a pro. We've had a lot of ragtime people from all over the country, but this year we have a premier guest, and we actually are lucky to have him on the phone right now. Scott Kirby, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Welcome from Boulder, Colorado. And Scott Kirby, you're going to be our featured performer at Ragtime in Randall this Saturday. Tell us what's going to happen, Scott.
You know, Brian Keenan's coming down from the Twin Cities, too, and he's a fine ragtime composer. There's some other people going to come and play as well. Rod Bryanson, I've known him for 20 years. So there's a lot of ragtime in the first half of the show, and it's an afternoon of ragtime, a lot of music, and you're going to get your fill of ragtime. And then in the evening, I'm going to do my, I call it like a movie concert is what it is. I'm a watercolor artist, and I paint images from the Great Plains and prairies. And I've weaved that into a show, which I call Main Street Souvenirs, which is an exploration of small-town life in the heartland and featuring the Great Plains. Iowa is the perfect place to do this show.
Well, we're looking forward to that, and I think that it's going to be a bit of a difference from our past shows because this souvenir show that you have at 7:30, there'll be a performance at 2 p.m. that'll be featuring you, and then later in the afternoon there'll be other pianists playing too who do ragtime. And then in the evening, your Main Street Souvenirs show. And I want to give the people a little background on you. Actually, you've been on one of my favorite television programs, CBS Sunday Morning with Charles Osgood. Tell us about that, Scott.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah, that was in 1998. And I went to New York, and they had me on to celebrate the 100-year anniversary of the composition of the Maple Leaf Rag by Scott Joplin. I got to actually sit down and play a little bit with Charles Osgood. He actually is a ragtime pianist, if you didn't know that. We played a little bit, had some interviews. That segment was about a year in the making, actually, because they filmed me in Lewiston, Idaho, working with kids. So, yeah, that was great. That was a ragtime centennial celebration.
And you've lived in France, and tell us about your time in France. What were you doing over there?
I had a great year over there with my kids, and my ex-wife has in-laws there, and we lived with them, and it was great. It was a good year. I did a lot of painting, a lot of composing, I composed a lot of the pieces, actually, that were on this program, and I did a lot of the paintings, too. Funny, I was living in France and painting images from the American Great Plains, and they thought I was crazy over there because that's where all the great painters go. And so I painted them a sunflower. I didn't tell them it was a Kansas sunflower, but it shut them up for a while anyway.
Well, that was fun to paint prairie paintings in France because you had to work from your imagination. And you've actually done a painting at Randall. You snuck into Randall here and took some photographs and did some paintings. And I think
it's in the show.
Yes. Now, are you going to bring some paintings with you to your performance on Saturday?
Just that one. I'm just going to bring the one I did at Randall. It's too cumbersome to travel with the original watercolors because they're framed in glass and they're heavy. I'm flying out, and I'm going to bring this one painting. It's about 28 by 22, and it's framed. And, yeah, I snuck in there. Actually, I was on my way to Minneapolis. I saw the sign for Randall. I said, wait a minute, I'm going to be playing here. Let's get off the highway. And I went into town and took some and decided to do a painting. I usually don't work that way. Usually I just work out of my imagination. But I painted the grain elevators right downtown at the Main Street there. And so I weaved them into the video portion of the program, too.
Yes, we printed up that on a postcard with your permission and sent that out as a publicity item for people who we know have attended Ragtime in the past. And when I looked at your painting and your treatment of the sky, I thought of Van Gogh. Anyone ever told you that?
Van Gogh is probably, he's probably my favorite painter. I'm not really schooled in art. I didn't study it. I don't really know how to paint. People tell me I do, but I didn't really study it. But Van Gogh is, he was a huge influence, I guess, on the way that I see the skies. When I'm in the Great Plains, something happens to my imagination. I see movement in everything, in the grass, in the sky, in the trees. So, yeah, it was a fun painting, actually. First time I tried to paint in about, I guess, 6 months.
Well, now, your Ragtime experience, you go with the big time because you were involved with the Scott Joplin Ragtime Festival in Sedalia, Missouri, and that's probably the premier festival for ragtime music. What was your role with that festival, Scott?
Well, I've been appearing there for over 20 years as a performer. I was a musical director for 2 years, a long time ago, maybe over 10 years ago. But, I just went there last year, too, and the year before, I took my daughter. She's 16. She played some violin with me. But that's a big festival. I've been to a couple other ones, too. There are ragtime festivals all over the country, as you know. I haven't been to Randall yet to play, but, wow, it's going to be a great time there. And Brian Keenan is one of my favorite composers. Can't wait to see him again.
Well, it's going to be quite a gathering there, and I'm looking forward to it on Saturday. The Elam Lutheran Church in Randall, one of the things we love about that facility is the perfect acoustics there. And you're going to enjoy playing there because of that. And just the history of Ragtime in Randall is going to draw some folks back to see it again. And I'm looking forward to this as one of the finest performances we've ever had at Ragtime in Randall. You might talk to people about what ragtime is. What is ragtime, Scott? How would you define that?
Yeah, ragtime, it is really America's first pop music, if you want to get technical about it. It was the first nationally popular style we had in this country. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that technology was in place for the distribution of sheet music and piano rolls, and everybody had a piano back then. There was an upright piano in every parlor, every hotel, every restaurant, every home. So pianos were really everywhere, and ragtime just hit at the right time. It's a combination of the European influence and the African influence, and it's a very unique mixture of the two. You have the African rhythms, the African-American rhythms combining with the European march, the march or two-step, some people call it a two-step, and syncopation in the melody, and it creates a unique sound that really made people perk up their ears because it was different than anything that had come before. And it led directly into jazz. It was one of the main ingredients in early jazz as well.
Yeah, that's quite a history, and it reminds me of some of the other changes in pop music, principally in my era when I was in No Junior High, something like that. Rock Around the Clock came out, and we had the beginning of rock and roll music, and I remember that a lot of parents were concerned that this was, stirring up terrible things in their teenagers, and I've heard that ragtime had the same reputation in the early 20th century. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. There's a whole chapter in my program about that, and a quote that I pull out, which really illustrates this. In fact, ragtime was the first American music to be called the devil's music. It was considered to be corrupting the youth of our country. So, Elvis on the Ed Sullivan Show was really a more recent example of how pop music has been vilified by the mainstream classical American culture. And ragtime was really, really radical when it came out, mostly because of the rhythms that were so exotic.
Well, I met Elvis once at a radio trade show in 1964, and he called me sir, and I thought he was a shy Southern boy. And here he is playing the devil's music and leading teenagers astray. So I think all things that were once radical become routine. But ragtime, do you think it's obscure these days that we have to explain what it is to a new generation?
That's funny. You know, you should say that because I heard somebody's cell phone go off the other day and it had Beautiful Dreamer. You know, Stephen Foster, Beautiful Dreamer. Da 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 da. I don't sing for a living, so don't publish that. But Stephen Foster, and I said, hey, that's great. That's a great cell phone ring. And it's Stephen Foster. And they said, ooh, it's Stephen Foster.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, so, you know, there's a whole chapter also in my program about the American song tradition and how we're losing touch with our musical heritage in this country. And ragtime is part of that. And technology is moving on ahead. But I think if we learn how to use technology in a way to spread the culture, then we'll be better off because we are losing touch with our heritage.
Well, I think that's one reason we have Ragtime and Randall, because I watch people come to that festival and people who, well, we have the devotees who fully understand it and come as a fan, and then they might drag someone with them who wonder what's going on, and it's fun to watch them discover this music. And when I watch the ragtime piano players, well, I'm amazed at the dexterity it takes, and it seems like each hand is doing something totally different than the other hand. You know what I mean?
That's exactly right. That's the whole basis of ragtime piano. The left hand is playing a steady beat and provides the two-step foundation, and the right hand is the syncopated hand, usually. Not always, but that's the essence of ragtime piano.
Right, we're going to hear that on Saturday, the 24th, coming up at Elam Lutheran Church in Randall, Iowa. Randall's a town of, I think, less than 200 people, so it's a very small place. And it's on Interstate Exit 128, north of Story City, my hometown. And that's going to be getting underway at 2 o'clock at Elam Lutheran Church in Randall. And then you have another performance at 7:30 p.m., right, Scott?
Yeah, the 7:30 show is my multimedia show. That's the one I'm talking about most. There'll be ragtime all afternoon starting at 1:15. So you'll get your fill of ragtime, then we'll have a little break, and then I'll do my big show at 7:30.
Now, how would you describe that show at 7:30? What's going to be happening so people understand when you say multimedia, what's going to be happening?
Yeah, it's really hard to sell images on the radio, but I'll do it. I'll do my best. I'm a watercolor artist. I'm self-taught, and I paint imaginary images of the Great Plains only. I don't do mountains and oceans and birds. I do only the Great Plains, and what I've done is I've taken that in and put it on like a slideshow behind me while I play these songs that I've written about the Great Plains. I've got a chapter on one-room schoolhouses. I've got a chapter on ghost towns. I've got a chapter, believe it or not, on grain elevators, because I love grain elevators. And I talk a little bit about the history of the Great Plains. I talk a little bit about the history of small-town America. And I've got nice archival black-and-white images that I dug up off the Internet to illustrate some of the chapters in the first half, which have to do more with small-town American life. I've got a chapter on baseball. I've got a chapter on the gazebo and the bandshell and how people used to gather in the park to listen to music. I've got a chapter on the American song tradition. So there are all these different chapters in the program, and while I'm playing, you see the images on the screen, either old archival video, or you see my paintings, you see a picture of Scott Joplin and ragtime composers, John Philip Sousa, you see him marching down the street. So it's quite the multimedia experience. It's a real celebration of, I guess you would call it, Americana.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing you perform, Scott, and then seeing all those wonderful visuals in your evening show. This is going to be Ragtime and Randall coming up this Saturday, the 24th of October. We have a performance in the afternoon by Scott Kirby and other ragtime artists. Plus, you could have a lunch there. And the 7:30 performance is Scott's original performance of that's really Main Street Souvenirs, we call it. Main Street Souvenirs. It'll be great piano work and some great visuals also that really relate to the plains and the history of small-town America. Scott, thank you for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on. I love radio. I love to talk to people on the radio, and I hope you guys can get out there and drag somebody with you to Randall. It's going to be a great time.
Yeah, Randall, exit 128 north of Story City off 35. And we're going to usher out this segment with a little actual ragtime music.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here together with my co-host, Mr. Paul Wearson of Story City. And you were just listening to music, ragtime music, which was performed in former years at the Ragtime in Randall Festival, which is put on by the Randall Area Fine Arts Council in Hamilton County. Mr. Wearson is part of the council, and thank you for your cultural work there, Paul.
Well, thank you.
Sounds like a really, really interesting show that's going to happen. Paul was speaking with composer, pianist, and visual artist Scott Kirby, who will be headlining this year's revival of Ragtime and Randall. He was speaking with us by phone from Boulder, Colorado, but he'll be here joining us in Iowa to perform on Saturday, October 24th at Alum Church in Randall at 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. And we'll post that information on our website, khoifm.org, in case you want to look it up later. And it's good to hear that Ragtime and Randall lives on, Paul.
Yes, nice, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a great show. And how often do you get a celebrity to come to Randall, Iowa, unless they have a flat tire? Another musician has just joined us here at the studio today. Fred Love has stopped by to talk about what will be happening at DG's Tap House on Saturday, October 24th, this upcoming Saturday. Welcome, Fred.
Hey, yeah. Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome, Fred. This is this evening is going to be part of a kind of an event in preparation for Halloween, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Would you describe a little bit what's going to happen?
Absolutely. We're billing this show as a Halloween honky-tonk, and there's going to be a costume contest. There's three acts on the bill. LaVon McRoberts is playing solo. She's coming up from Ankeny. Moonshine Sorrow, which is a country honky-tonk and rock and roll outfit from Waterloo. And then my band, the Colt Walkers, are headlining, and we've all put together we're going to have some CDs and T-shirts and merch and maybe a couple surprises that will go to the person who has the coolest Halloween costume.
Okay. So this is kind of getting ready for Halloween for the adults to have some time to play before
exactly.
The kids do,
it's,
right?
It's a 21 and up show. Everyone's welcome. Halloween costume competition. The idea is we're kind of mixing some images from the Old West and some images from classic horror movies. That's kind of the theme for the evening. Three mm-hmm. acts, LaVon McRoberts, Moonshine Sorrow, and my band, the Colt Walkers.
Now, the Colt Walkers, what's your band all about?
Well, we all live in Ames, and we've been around for, I think, about 3.5 years now. And we consider ourselves a rock band, but we've got a really heavy folk and country influence. Playing a Halloween honky-tonk show isn't going to be much of a stretch for us. We've got a couple of surprises on our set list that I think will be especially appropriate for the theme of the evening.
So, Fred, you described your music as being about the ordinary lives of people, which is a little bit like what Scott described a few minutes ago in his performance. Could you describe maybe one of the stories that your music tells?
Yeah, absolutely. I think country music has always kind of been about the common man. It's music for grown-ups. You know, it's not necessarily music that was aimed at teenagers or anything like that. It's grown-up music, and it takes on adult themes that people really face in ordinary everyday life. One song in particular that maybe I'll play here in a little bit, I was inspired to write it because I grew up in a really small town in northeastern Iowa, and one of the things that I noticed from time to time is intra-family conflict, and it almost always involves money or farmland, and you see members of their own families, parents and children or brothers and sisters, they kind of turn their back on one another. Not that it happens a lot, but it definitely happens from time to time. And so wrote a song kind of about that. And one person in particular, a good friend of my dad's, who went through a situation like that for years and years and, you know, caused him a lot of heartache, I think, throughout his life.
So you said you could play the song?
Yeah, absolutely, if you want me to. It is called Lessons I Should Have Learned.
Let's do it.
All right.
A long story short, they broke the faith of their faithful son. Near as I can tell, they did it for some wicked fun. So I crawled back to the Bible and became the sick, miserable wretch. So some baby-faced young doctor could tell me that I'm gonna catch my death. But don't you weep for my money. Don't don't you weep for the bridges I've burned. The hate, pretty baby, you can cry for the lessons I should have learned. And now the good Lord don't give out second chances every day. But I got mine and I threw it all away. And looking back, it's painfully clear that just what I should have done. Cause sometimes the best part of valor is knowing when to tuck tail and run. But don't you weep for my money, and don't you weep for the bridges I've burnt. Hey, pretty baby, you can cry for the lessons I should have learned. Now in a small town like this, you learn to put your family first. So when I heard what they were saying about me, you know it hit me right where it hurts. When a man's hard up, he can ask a stranger to put a dime in his cap. But with a nickel on the line, a man's own brother might shove a knife in his back. But don't you weep for my money, don't you weep for the bridges I've burnt. The hate, pretty baby, you can cry for the lessons I should have learned. Don't you weep for my money, and don't you weep for the bridges I've burnt. But hey, pretty baby, you can cry for the lessons I should have learned.
I like your analogy between rock music and country. Country is grown-up music. I think of Tammy Wynette and D-I-V-O-R-C-E and Johnny Cash.
Absolutely.
That's a good way to think of it. You grew up in Northeast Iowa.
Yes, sir.
Well, I went to school at Luther in Decorah. What town did you grow up in?
I'm from Buchanan County, so the town is called Quasquetin. A really small town, like 550 people, close to Waterloo. Independence is the county seat there.
Well, yeah, I just love northeastern Iowa, especially Decorah, where it's all hilly and a fast
very
river.
Pretty country. Yeah.
I get lonesome for that every fall when I should have gone back to school. I should have gone back to Luther this fall. Like here on the flatland, I get bored sometimes.
So in a small town, you learn to put family first.
That's right.
Very, very sobering song.
Thank you. Thank you.
You described your music to me of the Colt Walkers as roots rock.
Yeah.
Explain a little bit what roots rock is.
It's kind of, I would say, an amalgamation of rockabilly and country and folk and blues, even gospel. It's a mixture of maybe the more primal, more basic elements of American music. A lot of different influences, but I think it all sort of melds together. I think there's a common thread of a genuine American element to it that you don't really find anywhere else.
Yeah, that's what Scott was saying about ragtime, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think when you talk about amalgams of music, that's really what America is, a melting pot, an amalgam. And so it's hard to identify or separate different traditions that sort of blend into each other.
Absolutely.
As different musicians and bands interpret them. And that's really a rich, rich heritage we have.
It really is. And I think in the American South, you really see that. You see musicians from all different backgrounds playing a lot of different kinds of music, and it all got kind of mixed together. And, you know, they've called it rock and roll or R&B or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of different threads that
it's really hard to put a label on that.
It is.
Because, you know, different people play different songs from different backgrounds and in their own way. So there's about five different ways to play a song and interpret it. And so who knows what it all is? It's a marvelous melting pot. Mm-hmm. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses.
Absolutely.
So, that's Fred, America.
Fred, how many people are in the Colt Walkers?
There's four of us. Ryan Moritz, he plays mandolin and keys and some guitar, and he does singing. Greg Bruna plays bass. Dave Acheson is a drummer, and I play guitar and sing, and we all live right here in Ames.
And is this an acoustic band or an electronic band?
Well, I play both. I play about half of our sets nowadays with an acoustic guitar, and then I switch over to an electric for maybe more aggressive rock and roll sound. But we like to think of it all as, you know, as the Colt Walker sound.
Okay.
All of
these.
That's,
you're going to be at the DG Tap House.
DG's Tap House, Saturday night.
How do we find DG's Tap House?
It's right here on Main Street in Ames. We're just a couple blocks from where we are right now.
So you're going to be downtown Ames this Saturday, the 24th. What time do things get underway?
Probably going to be about 9 o'clock. Three acts on the bill, costume party. I think it's going to be a terrific time. We're really excited for the show.
Are you coming in costume, too?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've actually got my costume all picked out. I just had a practice run a couple of days ago to make sure it looks the way I want it to.
And you're not revealing anything at this point.
No, sir. No. It's going to be a big surprise.
DG's Tap on Saturday night, 9 o'clock or so, things get underway.
Yes, sir.
And not only will Fred Love be there in his band, but some other folks will be entertaining too, and it's going to be Halloween.
Halloween Honky Tonk, that's right.
That's right. Halloween Honky Tonk, I like that.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Paul Wearson, and we're here with Fred Love, who will be performing at DG's Tap House, Roots Rock, and the Colt Walkers. And during the show, earlier in the show, Pat Schlarbaum, KHOI environmental reporter, brought us an interview with Hannah Bates from the Prairie Rivers Resource Conservation and Development Watershed, and Amy Yoakum, who is the resource manager for Story County Conservation Board. They were talking about what is being done to clean up the Hickory Lake watershed in Story County and an upcoming series on the issue of water quality called Nutrients in November. And there will be a meeting, there'll be a first meeting on this on October 27th.
And then Scott Kirby joined us by phone from Colorado to tell us what we can expect this year with Ragtime and Randall, the music festival held this Saturday, the 24th, at Elam Lutheran Church in Randall, Iowa, exit 128 off Interstate 35. Scott will perform in Randall this coming Saturday. He's a composer, pianist, and visual artist, and will be headlining Ragtime and Randall.
You can find out more information about all of these events on our website, khoifm.org, as soon as Ron Carson, our webmaster, can post it. And I see he's outside there right now. So thanks, Ron, for that.
Okay, Local Talk will be broadcast again at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Now that's khoifm.org. You can like us on Facebook to get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk is engineered by Rick Morrison. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly. And Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878 or through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. And remember that your participation as listener, as well as your generous contributions, are what make KHOI possible. Paul, you want to take us out?
Yeah, thanks for listening again, and see you again on the radio.